for your right to party!
You're listening to the Arrowhead Live Podcast Network.
Thank you, Kansas City. We did it, baby!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a championship edition of the Aftermath Podcast. I am your host, Christopher Tenpenny, joined by my co-host, CJ Jones. CJ,
how are we doing?
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni. Shout out to Kelsey, man. That's probably the quote of the year. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, my gosh. It was great. And he threw in the, you know, you gotta fight for the right to party, bringing it back to a few years ago.
Gotta keep the brand.
It was just a perfect ending to a heck of a football game, which obviously a lot to talk about. But I just want to first, like, before we actually get into the gameplay, man, you were there. You were in the stadium. As any of our listeners know, that's probably where you're going to be. What was the energy like? What was it like, man?
The crowd was electric. My ears are still ringing, Chris. I woke up. I told my boss, I'm like, hey, I'm probably not going to be coming into work today. If anything, I'm going to be ready. I'm just telling you, I'm like, bro, I'm exhausted from the game. He said, don't even worry about it. I already know. But Arrowhead, the real Arrowhead, was in full effect, man. It was loud. We got multiple penalties on the Bengals trying to get them out of sorts. They had to call a lot of timeouts because they couldn't hear the play call. Linemen were miscommunicating. The 12 men at Arrowhead Faithful definitely showed up, and Chiefs Kingdom did their thing on Sunday. So shout out to you guys. Whoever went to the game, all you guys get some food and some tea to clear up your throats. Can we go have another big one in 2 weeks? But they definitely showed out. Shout out to the Kingdom, man. They did their part.
Man, it was deafening, too. Like, you could tell on TV, and Romo was talking about it a lot early, like that first quarter when, you know, the Chiefs maybe played their best. Like, it was just ridiculous from the noise of the crowd. So shout out to Arrowhead doing its thing. Also, you know, we know the players took exception to the Burrowhead. So did this fan base. And they showed out and let Burrow know. Obviously, he wasn't the one doing the talking, but let Burrow and the Bengals know whose house this really is, man. Like, it was just awesome.
Burrowhead, I'm playing. I'm gonna be respectful.
Hey, who day?
Who we day? Oh, okay. No. Cancun on three? Cancun on three.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie. I saw some Bengals fans sitting in front of me, and I sent Chris this picture offline, and it's all over Twitter. They were holding a sign saying we're looking forward to the Super Bowl. So I'm like, right. We're guaranteeing a win, essentially. So that's what they were telling me, Chris, the fans in the section sitting next to me. So
I have never seen a fan base accomplish so little, talk so much crap. Oh,
facts.
Like, the Chiefs in 2018, coming off, you know, Pat's MVP season, obviously we won the Super Bowl the next year. I didn't see us talking that much crap on the way there.
Because, like, we didn't win it.
Yeah, we didn't win nothing. We had a great year, one of the best years, you know, up to that point in Chiefs history.
Exactly.
Like the Bengals last year. And, like, yeah, there's some crap talking. There's some optimism. That's just happened in football. But to assume that they were just going to come in here.
Crazy.
And roll again, like, call it.
Talking about they got to see us. Joe Mixon talking about they the big dogs. They doing a lot of talking for a team that ain't got no jewelry on their finger. Actually, I'll take that back, Chris. They have an AFC Championship ring on their finger.
Oh, man, good
for
them.
That's the kind of jewelry they like to brag about. That's apparently what they like.
Hey, we're comparing those. We got three in the last 4
years. A little too a lot, just saying.
Bro, and, like, I know this has been, you know, brought up to a pulp, but, like, the mayor saying declaring the day is they got to play us day.
Play us?
What?
Sound good.
You won one game at Arrowhead.
I was at the stadium and, like, my signal was kind of bad. So I'm in the pro shop watching the game with some of my buddies that came in town from Chicago who were in Arrowhead for their first time. They had the best time of their life. And we're watching the game. And then somebody shows me a clip of Pat walking through the tunnel. And when I saw him
flipping people the bird
into the camera, I was like, bro, we're winning the game. Like, 15 and seeing all the clips. He's seen all the media. He's pissed off. He's locked in. I'm like, we're winning. I knew at that point we were going to win the game, Chris.
And he played incredible. You could tell he wasn't 100%. The ankle was a little bit of an issue, especially on certain plays when he had to move a little bit more. But Nick Wright updated his rankings. I don't know whoever follows this. Nick Wright had his top 3 quarterbacks in the league last week, and it was Mahomes 1, Burrow 2. Mahomes on 1, leg 3. After last night, he updated to where Mahomes is 1, Mahomes on 1 leg is 2, and Burrow is 3, because Pat played out of his mind considering the circumstances. And, I mean, I don't I say this at least once a podcast. I don't even know what to say about the guy anymore. I don't.
29 for 43, 326 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. And he did all of this with missing how many receivers, Chris? No Kadarius Toney, no Juju, no Miko. Justin Watson was deactivated.
Bell was a scratch.
Bell was a scratch. Travis had the back spasm before the game. He was a game time decision, apparently.
You had Marcus Kemp.
He's been cut like 1,500 times on this team. And we brought him in to make a big catch on third down. And Isaiah Pacheco was our third leading receiver with 5 catches for 59 yards. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who everybody's been talking about all year about being inconsistent. He doesn't attack the ball. His hands are a scratch. You don't know what he's going to get from him. 6 catches for 116 yards and a tutty, man. He showed out, man. I got to give MVS his credit. He showed out yesterday, man.
It was incredible, and I got some stuff on MVS that I want to get into later. Sticking with Pat, like, I just don't know how you're able to block out that pain, because you could tell his pain and be able to make those reads like he was able to. The touchdown to Kelsey, everyone wants to talk about the MVS touchdown, which was also a great play. I think Matt Hasselbeck did a very good job breaking it down on ESPN after the game, but the Kelsey touchdown was more impressive to me because he was supposed to run a corner.
Yep.
And the Bengals did a very good job bracketing, staying on top, not letting it get there. Mm-hmm. So Kelsey sees that and knows he has to break it off. Mahomes is seeing the same thing Kelsey's seeing, knows he's going to break it off. When that, I guarantee you that's not the route. The route was to run a corner. And for them both to be able to, like, the confidence for Pat to throw it, knowing that they're seeing the same thing for a touchdown, that was just it blew my mind when I saw it. When I saw the replay.
And that was on fourth down.
Like, that's just – they could both not play – I mean, especially Kelsey, but they both cannot play another down and be first ballot Hall of Famers right now, absolutely, which is just absolutely insane to think about as
the
a Kansas
City Chiefs
fan. The
chemistry that those two have in the middle of the field, because all week they knew the game plan. We knew the game plan with, hey, double team in bracket 87. And for the most part, when we played them in the last 3 matches, they did that. But mm-hmm. in this game, even for Trav to finish with 7 for 8 for 78 yards and a touchdown, average 11 yards per catch, with a guy like that who you know was arguably the best pass catcher in football this year, to come into a game where you lose 3 receivers, your lineman blocked well, but your quarterback is banged up with an ankle, and they know the game plan to get the ball to him, and he still got open. At that point, Chris, like you said, there's nothing more you can say. Like, there's nothing really else you can do. That's been one of the better pass coverage defenses we've seen this year in the league. And they've given other teams fits. They held the Buffalo Bills to 10 points at home. And mm-hmm. we just put up a 23-piece, and we really took it easy on them, Chris, because we left a lot of points on the board. So we really should have beat them by 10-plus. But to go out there and finish that game, like you said, to will through the injuries and all the things that went on the defensive side of the ball, offensive side of the ball, and I'm sure, man, you will get into it. I can't say enough about 15, man. He's the best in the league. He's an MVP for a reason. And we're going to ride his tail all the way through, man. He's going to be our leader for a reason for a long time.
Right, and he's got a couple things that he could potentially break. I think it's – so job the MVPs man. are 0-8 in the Super Bowl. Now Mahomes hasn't been officially announced, but he will be by the time the Super Bowl starts. I think they're 0-8 in their last 8 Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something he could break. And the passing yard leader I don't think has won since, like, 71.
The last team with the number one offense was the Falcons in 2016 to make it to a Super Bowl.
No, but to actually win, I don't think. Well, I think it's in the 70s or something like that. Had the passing leader. Like,
exactly.
So, like, there's a few things that Pat, you know, he's been breaking all these. He broke the Madden curse. He broke, you know, so why not break this?
Why not get the triple crown? It's right there in front of you. Why not finish the job? Job's not finished, man.
But let's jump into MVS now, because I thought on the offensive side of the ball, like, yeah, Kelsey is great and was an animal, but his play was the most important out of any individual player.
All the things that we've been saying this year, we've criticized MVS about and his inconsistencies, he cleared all that up yesterday. Every ball he high-pointed that came to him, didn't double catch anything, made big catches in the red zone when we needed him to. All the pressure was on him to make plays when everybody else went down. He stepped up and didn't fold and just – he just came up big in the moment. Every catch that came to him, he 6 for 8 for 100 yards. You can't ask for a bigger day than MVS. If anybody would have told you that before the game that MVS is going to finish with 100 yards, they probably would have called you crazy. Or if anything, you would have thought that would have came off like what, Chris? Maybe 2 big bombs or maybe like 1 play like 50 to 60 yards. But to just dice up the defense and make big play after big play, whether it was short, intermediate, or deep, even plays in the red zone, which that's 2 weeks in a row for him.
Mm-hmm.
Connection is finally coming to fruition that we wanted to see all year, and that's such a good thing to see, especially for this offense and for that group of receivers that everyone had questions about coming into the season.
You know what MVS's play is reminding me of, right?
Who?
So in 2019, Sammy Watkins
had
670 receiving yards and only 3 touchdowns in the regular season.
But
in 2022, MVS only had 687, so there's literally 14 yards difference, and only caught 2 touchdowns in the regular season. But playoff Sammy went for 14, 288, and a tutty in 3 touchdown games. While MVS,
is this a thing now?
It might be, man. He only had the 1 touchdown catch in the Jags, but that's all you needed. You know, he's got 7 for 122 and 2 TDs in 2 games. He has another 100-yard game and a touchdown in the Super Bowl. Playoff MVP. That's the thing. It's like there's a lot of fans that love Sammy Watkins still because of that postseason, as we should. Yeah, playoff Sammy was awesome. But he was overall, you know, kind of disappointing during the regular season. MVS is on his way to being the same. No one cares what you do in the regular season if you get that ring at the end of the day. Like,
I love it. Love to show up in January, huh? I guess.
Oh my gosh.
Whatever the secret stuff, I guess.
Hey, if MVS shakes Darius Slay, I'll like Sammy did to Richard Sherman, I'll lose it. That'll be like, all right, it's over. That's the comparison. It's too perfect.
No, but the guys showed up, man. They showed up. I definitely wanted to touch on a point of the thing that we wanted to see the most of going against this defense, and I was most concerned about going into this week was Lou Amaru, obviously one of the smarter defensive minds in the league. He does a great job of dropping 8 in the coverage and 7 most of the time and forcing you to throw the ball short or run the football. Obviously, we didn't run the football at the highest clip like we've done the previous 2 matchups against the Bengals. But for Pacheco to be our 3rd leading receiver and 5 catches on 6 targets for 59 yards, you know what that tells me, Chris? Pat took the easy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And screens and checkdowns, and obviously Pacheco broke off that crazy tackle down the left sideline, looking like a madman. He had his own little mini beast quake, whatever you want to call it. For in those moments, for us to obviously like learn from our mistakes and things we made mistakes on last year in that exact same moment, that exact same game, for Pat to correct those mistakes, for him and Andy and EB to all be on the same page and just let your guys do the work for you. And kind of like what we said on our previous episode, the injury may be like a little bit of a blessing in disguise, because now you have to take the easy step because you can't make every play with your legs. And Pat obviously saved his legs for that last one. We appreciate him for it. But to learn from those mistakes and give the ball to your guys and let them make plays for you, I was so, so, so proud of Pat and his offense for growing in those moments and learning from your mistakes.
No, definitely, definitely. And we can get back into the offense a little bit, but we're about 12 minutes in this podcast, and we haven't even talked about the best player on the field
yet. Best player on the freaking field.
Everybody. And that's Chris Jones.
Stone Cold, baby.
Bro, the talk about Chris Jones, too, because we all know, never had a playoff sack. Made his impact over. He got the sack out of the way early, picked up another one to close it. I mean, he was the Eagles played very well in that first game, and Hassan Reddick played well. I think Chris Jones was the best player of the weekend, period. Like, he was that dominant of a defensive player. And even though he only had 2 sacks, He made an impact on every play he was in there. I swear, he was in the backfield or taking on a double team, or like, just you need your best players to step up in these big games. And Chris Jones had the best game of his career, which is saying something because he's had a very successful career up to this point.
Hey, when you look at that game and you see how many pressures he got, I think he finished the game with, I think it was 8 QB pressures.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously with 2 sacks, should have been 3, but one of them was, we let George get in there and make a play. But obviously in that moment for him to start the game fast, we had 3 sacks in the first quarter. That lets me know what type of emotion and type of juice. And I said during our last pod, Chris, and I was telling everyone at the stadium, how we start this game is going to tell me how our defense is going to help us win it. And for our defense to come out in those first 2 or 3 drives and get pressure on Joe Burrow immediately, that let me know everything I needed to know about this game. Because we knew their weakness of their offense is their offensive line, but they have really good receiver to get the ball out quick. And they tried to counter that when we were getting pressure by giving the ball to Jamar Chase out in the slot, because I think he finished the game with, 9 targets. So they gave the ball to Jamar Chase a lot in the flat off those bubbles and those quick flats to try to say, hey, we believe your guys can't tackle our guys. So we're just going to get the ball out to them quick and see if you can make a tackle. And our DBs did a great job of rallying and getting guys on the ground. But I can't say enough about Chris, man. Chris, Frank, what is up with Frank Clark when it comes to January football, Chris? Is there something that he just – magically does? Like, what do you think it is?
I talked about it last week. He's Julian Edelman. He's an average to slightly above average player in the regular season. Nothing flashy. And then the postseason comes, and he just becomes an all-time great. And it doesn't make some of those guys just have that switch. And you know what? I'm happy Frank Clark has it, because dude's 3 sacks away from being the all-time sack leader in the postseason.
Are you kidding me? Frank Clark, the all-time playoff sack. Imagine that sentence. Frank Clark, the all-time playoff sack leader. A guy that can barely stay on the field during the regular season.
Always got stomach issues.
It's something he can't help it. Like, it's a medical condition, but this guy has a chance to be the all-time. You know how many great pass rushers have been in this league? And this guy has a chance to be all-time?
He's already an all-time.
He's top three. He has a chance to be number one all-time? Like, that's mind-boggling to think of. Like you said, Julian Edelman is a perfect comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just something happened. A above average competitor becomes an all time great in the postseason, which is so crazy,
bro.
It's what you need on this defense, and we talked about too with this defensive line. Like it was the most talked about position in the offseason going into camp and everything, for good reason, because the Chiefs knew that, and the Chiefs fan base knew that they were gonna have to get impact for more than Chris Jones for this team to have a chance. And sure, maybe they don't have another star on this team, but Mike Dana has grown. George Karlaftis has grown. Frank Clark is healthy now. You know, we've seen Colin Saunders get better. Dunlap's been huge. Like, all these C-plus to, you know, B-level pass rushers next to Chris Jones has made this defensive line go to maybe one of the most concerned things. The Eagles' offensive line is great, but, like, I feel just pound for pound, like, the Chiefs are still a little bit maybe at a disadvantage, and that's a lot to say to the Eagles. But, like, they can hold their own. They're not going to just get pushed all over because of how well they've played down the stretch.
All that depth that we've been crying about this whole season, that the trade deadline, we need to add more bodies, or we need to go get a guy via free agency, or we need to sign a guy when guys have to cut deadline and maybe some guys we can add on waivers. This D-line showed up, and Mike Dana was probably the unsung hero. And I watched a lot of the because I saw – and I was at the game, so I didn't get to really watch too much film until I got home. And I watched them all 22 today, and I'll probably post some clips tonight or in the morning when me and Chris post the episode. But to see Mike Dana, obviously the name didn't show up on the stat sheet, but I saw so many twists and stunts we did with him. He created so many lanes and one-on-ones for Chris alone himself, but for guys like Frank Clark, guys like George Karlaftis. And you need that guy to not be selfish in those moments, say, hey, I want to get the sack, but if I can just create a lane for my brother to keep dominating because they couldn't block Chris all day, why not keep going back to it? There was even moments where Carlos Dunlap was telling Chris to, hey, go inside the tackle. Chris was like, no, I got you. I'm going to stay out here on this edge and whip the right tackle and just put Joe Burrow on the ground multiple times like we wanted to see him do for the last 3 matchups we've had against the Cincinnati Bengals. So I was so, so proud of this D-line. Joe Coleman's probably been arguably the most important coach on this staff coming into the season, because we all had questions about this defensive line. Me and Chris were probably at the forefront of that. How are we going to get pressure towards the end of the year? How are we going to get guys on the ground to get sacks? Nobody had this much. I would say we had confidence in this group, but nobody expected them to do what they did last night. For them to come into that game and dominate and put Joe Burrow on the ground multiple times, disrupt his timing, and obviously their receivers make plays because they have good guys to make plays, but our defensive line gave our DBs confidence. And when you get pressure early, it makes your job as a defensive back to play that much easier to me. That's how I've always been pro, having a great D-line or having great DBs. When you get pressure, it disrupts the quarterback's timing, his rhythm, his eyes, his confidence. It throws off everything. So if I'm getting pressure on you, you can't look downfield to look at those great DBs if you have them. So I'm so, so proud of this D-line, this group, and I'm sure they'll be even more pissed off because ESPN is going to give us some more bulletin board material talking about Jason Kelce and the Kelce Bowl and that offensive line, like Chris mentioned. So I'm excited for the matchup next week. But hell of a job to the D-line, man. They won us that game yesterday. They won us that game for sure.
And you bring a good point there talking about confidence with the DBs from the D-line, because I didn't even think about this, but like when Snead goes out early, that's your guy. That's your playmaker. Yeah, that's your
play, you know, man.
He can play in the slot. He can go out and cover Chase one-on-one. Like, you can ask L'Jarius Snead to do whatever, and he goes down immediately. It's basically like Tyron two years ago.
Tyron Matthew, yep.
And Tyron went out. When your leader, your do-everything guy goes out immediately and you're out of the game with it.
Like,
Joshua Williams coming in. So now you got 3 rookie corners. How are they going to respond? It's a lot easier to respond well when the defensive line's getting sacks and, you know, the Bengals are punting, even though the DBs may not actually be doing anything at that point. You feel like you are. You're like, hey, we're getting off the field. I can do this. I'm out here covering one of the best receivers. And boom, that set the tone. And Jalen and Josh and McDuffie played lights out for what they were asked to do the rest of the game. The defense was incredible. The defense played so well the entire game.
Absolutely. And when you have guys like Jalen Watson and Josh Williams, who we know are both 6- and 7-round picks, and guys to come in those moments, and Jalen Watson looked T. Higgins in the eye, and obviously – We know he gave up the big touchdown play, and that's just T. Higgins being 6'5". Like, he's right. going to make plays. Yeah, but exactly. To respond in that next drive, and T. Higgins had another deep pass to him, and Jalen Watson to recognize the route, cut it short, and pick it off right before halftime, that's such a big play for this team. And obviously, we know Trent McDuffie had an opportunity to get an interception. He got his hands on it. Brian Cook corrected himself because Jamar Chase made that catch on fourth down, and Brian Cook didn't get his head around, and Jamar Chase was able to go up there and make a play. Brian Cook corrected himself on that next drive, tipped the ball, and what happened? Josh Williams ended up with an interception. And that confidence just grew, like Chris said, and these guys were just feeding off that energy that the D-line was giving them and the crowd as well. So all the young guys, we can't say enough about Josh Williams and Trent McDuffie and Jalen Watson and Byron Cook. It's just to have four rookies in that moment. If somebody would have told you we're going to lose LeJarius Sneed on the second or third play of the game, you got to play the rest of the game with four rookie DBs going against the best receiver corps in football, they probably wouldn't have picked us to win that game. But Spagnuolo went through all the turmoil, all the disrespect, all the talk this year to stick with the process and stay locked in the moment and don't flinch. We went against some of Chris. We've been saying this all year. We went against every receiver you can think of. We went against Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis, Davante Adams. We went against Keenan Allen. We went Mike Williams. We've seen every receiver you could think of. And these guys didn't flinch because they were ready for the moment. And that's why I was so thankful for all the teams that we did schedule this year, because we've seen every receiver you can think of. So there's no reason to be afraid in that moment. You've been through the best. So you're here for a reason. So why not make plays now? And the guys played their technique. They stayed in phase. They came in their eyes around. They looked for the ball. And guys were just super confident in those moments. And I was so, so, so proud of the young guys for sure, man. There's nothing more you can ask of that, man. Especially four rookies. Yeah. Half of these guys are seventh rounders.
Dude, it's insane. It's like the draft class that Veach put together this year is absolutely insane. Like, McDuffie and Karlaftis have been pretty good since the start. Williams and Watson just get better. Cook, who's had some boneheaded plays, and he did again in the AFC Championship game, has still gotten better and was able to make a big play. Joshua Williams, a D2 guy.
Fayetteville State, baby.
Had some ups and downs, you know, and we saw it again yesterday, but still out there competing, making plays. I even talked about Pacheco on the other side of the ball, who's doing another what he's rookie. Doing as a running back. Like, Sky Moore stepping up. There's so much to talk about this game. Like, the draft class has just been absolutely insane, and you're seeing production all across the field, and you never see that. There's like, it's just insane what these young guys are doing.
No, absolutely. Veach has had another masterclass this offseason. And we all had questions. We all had our convictions and things we were upset about, whether it be George Karlaftis rushing or Josh and Jalen in coverage, Sky on his punt returns. Jesus Christ, Sky Moore. Did he have the biggest punt return in Chiefs history? Was that probably the biggest punt return ever?
As off the top of my head, yeah.
I mean, it put us in position. It put us at, what, the 50? When I saw the punt, because I was on the side of the field where I was looking. I'm on the backside of the punter, so I'm on the Bengals. Offensive side about looking at the ball. So I saw the punt and I was like, it's really low. He didn't get a lot of air on it. He kicked it far, but not high. So I'm like, if it's a low punt, that's what you want as a returner because it gets to the returner quicker. So I can see the return and see how the blocks are set up. He caught the ball, which was the first part. Like, thank you. He caught it. And then he just sprint down the sideline. Great block by the gunner on that side and the steal of the sideline. And Sky took off for a minute. I thought he was going to house it because he had a great lane. He could have cut it back in. But to get to the 50 to set up this offense and obviously Pat and the O-line finished it off. There's nothing more you can ask from Sky Moore in those moments, who me and you and everybody in Chiefs Kingdom has been critical about, not him as a receiver. We've had our gripes, but more so as a punt returner. To be in that moment and to, like I said, not flinch, to show no fear and make arguably the biggest play of that game, there's nothing more you can ask from Sky Moore, man. Another rookie, another good find for Veach, and just a big moment, big, big, big moment for him. That's going to do nothing but add more confidence to his story going on further down the line.
Here's what's hilarious about that for me is, like, I never had an issue with Sky fumbling the punts. I had an issue with Toe putting a guy who did not return kicks in college. This was not a skill set he came into the NFL. I had an issue with Toe continually putting him back there early on in the season.
Exactly. That's what we always
after making mistakes. But what's funny is, does Sky have the confidence or the knowledge to do what he did last night if Toe isn't putting him back there in week 3 and week 4 and week 5? Like, is Sky making that play if he doesn't have those early reps and those early failures? Like,
yeah, when your coach has confidence in you, you can't. And as a player, we know Sky knew coming into the season we have 5 receivers. So it's going to be hard for him to get a lot of snaps unless he just beats people out. But the veterans we brought in proved to why they should be here. Guys like Juju, MVS, obviously Mecole's in a contract year. We have all these guys who've been in big moments. They played in big games. So it's going to be kind of hard for you to just eat out of their snaps. So when coach says, hey, I need you to be a returner for us, as a rookie, you're going to play any way you can get on the field. And he had his ups and downs. He struggled a lot, like Chris said. But to bounce back in that moment and show no fear and not flinch and to have, like I said, the biggest, arguably the biggest play of the game to set us up for that win. I can't say enough about Sky. And obviously, he made plays on offense with jet sweeps and big time catches, try to make some plays. But I was always confident about Sky as a receiver. Obviously, I had my questions about him as a punt returner, but for him in that moment to look fear in the face and just have no doubt, like leave no doubt when you go on the field and make that play, I can't say enough about Sky Moore in that moment, man, because he easily could have done something horrific and we all would have been on this app right now or in the world today killing him right now if that would have happened again. For Tobe to have the confidence and for Sky to have the confidence in himself to go out there and make that kind of play, there's nothing more you can ask of 24, man. He did his job beyond expectation.
Right, no, definitely. And it's at the point now to where, like, I think confidence is a big part in the NFL to where if Sky Moore opens up the – I think as long as Tony and Hardman are healthy, he won't – Moore will not be the punt returner in the Super Bowl. But if he opens up the 2023 season as the punt returner, I have a lot more confidence in it now than I did prior to that game. Absolutely. Just because I think he has confidence in himself. He's going to have a whole offseason to, you know, figure out exactly the best way to track live punts. And kid's got some juice, and he showed it on that play, and it was a big-time play. Now we got to talk about the elephant in the room. We haven't gotten to it yet. It's all over social media. It's going to keep being all over social media. But the crybaby Bengals and their fans cannot stop complaining about the refs. That is just such a loser mentality. Like, was it perfect officiating? Hell no. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say it was. Did the Chiefs maybe be on the end of a few more favorable calls? Probably. But if you look at it from start to finish, a whole game script, like, it actually evened out quite a bit. Like, that's not the reason the Bengals lost. Quit being crybabies. Losers take screenshots of holding, you know, a frame. And holding everything.
You can do that in every game. Like, come on, what are we doing?
Like, man, like, just take this L and go home and eat your spaghetti chili or whatever the heck you call it. Like,
bro, eat that little Skyline chili, whatever that
shit is. Yeah, like, goodness gracious. Like, and what's hilarious about it is, like, the two biggest penalties they have an issue with is the free third down, which I would be mad if it was reversed. The Chiefs punted.
We still end up punting the ball. That's the crazy part.
The second penalty they're all worked up about is the intentional grounding, which Joe Burrow threw an 18-yard pass to Hurst the next play. Like,
you got a first down after these so-called like BS calls.
The third one they're irritated about, which they may have a little gripe about, is the Frank Clark pushed Burrow down late in the end zone. That could have been a roughing the passer. They're switching that to where, hey, Joe Mixon got hit late out of bounds too, and you didn't call it. They scored on the next play of that one too. Like,
they were complaining about the call when he shoved Pat out of bounds. He took two steps in the white.
Oh my god!
Two steps in the white, and you're mad about it. All right, that's
loser mentality. And they were crying last year about the Rams, saying that there was a missed hold in that game, kind of like 49ers fans were.
Oh, is this the same fan base that told me that Chris Jones wasn't going to make plays against your O-line?
Just because you loser mentality.
That's what they were telling me this week. Like, Chris Jones never had a sack against us. Why would he do it? I'm like, oh, so you're telling me he's not going to make plays this week. The guy who dominated you, you told me you weren't worried about. So who really was wrong in this situation? Okay.
Yeah. It's such a face. And you know what? I know Chiefs fans aren't perfect too, and there's our fair share when the Chiefs takes L's that fan base has the same people doing things. But like, You can't let it be the whole identity of why you lost. You had the ball with 2.5 minutes left to go down the field and win the game, and you punted.
Chris, they told me that Joe Burrow was ice in the clutch. They told me he was Joe Seisty. Joe Seisty threw 2 interceptions, and if we're being honest, Chiefs Kingdom, should have been 4.
Yeah.
Trent McDuffie got his hands on a pick.
Hey,
Jalen Watson dropped his. Jalen got the one on great phase on T. Higgins. Obviously, Brian Cook tipped one, and Josh Williams got one. And there should have been a fourth one on that throw to Hayden Hurst when Brian Cook hit him and dislodged him from the ball, and we caught it. That should have been Jalen's second, but they called it back to say it was DPI. It was bang, bang. I get it. It was kind of in the middle of the moment. I don't think you can call that, but I get the call. So
right. And that's the thing is, like, if they were trying to rig it for the Chiefs, they don't call Wiley's hold on the Pacheco touchdown.
Which was trash.
Yeah, they don't call Wiley's taunting, which was also he did a little dance in front of a guy. Like,
it's grown man. What are we doing? Are we 5?
And while yes, it was by the letter of the law, it was defensive pass interference on that Brian Cook hit. It was so bang bang that you see those not called all the time. Like
it wasn't so like egregious, like, oh, he clearly, I'm like, he, yeah, I'm
right. It was bang, like, bang. It was a good call. But I'm saying if you're trying to rig it for the Chiefs, that call doesn't get made either. So, exactly. Let's hold it. It was pretty even throughout. It just the Chiefs got a few of them late of those questionable ones, and that's why everyone's freaking out about it.
They want to be upset. If they called that Kadarius Toney catch a catch, that would have been at 7 points right there.
Right.
If they don't call that holding, call on Pacheco. That's another 7 points right there. We really could have got up on them by like 20 points going into halftime.
Right.
But they obviously, the Kadarius did drop the ball. That's a fair call. I don't agree with the Wiley hold. I rewatched the clip today. I don't think it was holding. That's just me. But I didn't hate it.
I saw it. Yeah.
Exactly. So they were talking about rigging it. They really could have gave us a lot of calls that wouldn't have made the game even close. Because it shouldn't even have been a 3-point game, if we're being honest. But it was, because everybody had a chance to make plays. And for you to have your quarterback with the ball in his hands, who you told me can make any throw in any moment and throw an interception in the double coverage, what does that say about our defense? What does that say about your offense? We made plays when we had to. And to not give another team credit, who you said we weren't going to be able to stop you all week, and we did it in that moment, I have nothing else to say to that fan base, because they didn't respect us coming into this game.
No.
So why do you think they're going to respect us now? That's why I really don't care what they got to say.
Right. And the only other thing I'm going to say about the Bengals is, like, you can't be talking this crap and not be able to handle it when you lose. Like, exactly. Eli Apple's mom, who also was talking like him, deleted her Twitter. And Eli Apple hasn't said a word since. Like,
you can't act like that,
you
man.
Can't. Mike Hilton's yelling about third nines, like, or Jamar Chase, was it third nines that the Chiefs punted on? Like, you can't be dishing this out all week, actually, for an entire year. You know, the Bengals have kind of hated the Chiefs for a year, talking smack, and not be able to handle when you lose.
Thank
because
you.
Maybe a call or two didn't go your way at the end. Like,
but every game you've been in, there's always been. Were you not the team that got a touchdown called when the whistle was clearly blown in that Raiders game last year in their wild card matchup? So don't tell me about games when you should have won or lost based off refs. You know how it works.
The Sam Hubbard 99-yard return against the Ravens, and that ended up being a close game. There was a clear block in the back that the refs didn't call.
Clear.
It just evens out. It's part of it. You know, does the officiating need to be better? Do we all want even officiating?
Absolutely.
Of course. Is that the reality of the world we live in?
Yes.
No. So just take your lumps, take your L, go back home.
Don't run off Twitter, Mrs. Apple. Come on.
Try again next year. Man, hey.
Ms. Apple, my boy Cancun, man. Get a Mai Tai for me, buddy.
Man. It was just it just rubbed me the wrong way to see.
No, it's just, bro. You can't, and it's even more funny because obviously we know players get into smack talk on social media, and it's all fun and games. But when the family members get into it, and then you kind of run like that, that makes me lose a tad bit of respect for you, because you were dishing it out like Chris said, and now you don't want to, you duck in the smoke after the game was over. So I think it's kind of funny. That's why I never really took him seriously as a, like I said, he's a good player and he talks a lot of trash. He's not really that. On that type of level, the way he talks. But for us to come in that moment, obviously, to make plays the way we did and to go through all that adversity, and they were giving us bulletin board material all weekend. When I saw Pat Mahomes give him the bird before the game started, I kind of knew what game this was going to be. I knew 15 was locked in. And whenever 15 is pissed off, Chris, and he's locked in, Silky P was in the building with Brittany and the whole fam. When 15's locked in and his family's in there, I knew he was going to put on a show. So I knew how this was going to go, man.
Man, it was a great game. I was stressed the whole time. The only time I was really actually pissed off at like the Chiefs mm-hmm. was when Annie punted back from the 37.
Exactly.
I you can't do that against the Eagles in the Super Bowl. You gotta be more aggressive. That punt. It was, for those of you not on Twitter, it was ranked on. There's an app that can determine cowardly punts, surrender punts. Excuse me, and it was ranked like the highest surrender punt in the history of the NFL by kicking that away at that point in the game. So you can't be doing that. You got lucky because your defense was playing well and was able to get a stop on Joe Burrow, but like, I'm not in a tie game with that amount of time. I'm not giving it to another MVP candidate, and that's what the Eagles have in Jalen Hurts. You can't punt there.
The only thing that in that moment I would rather went for it as well. The only thing that I'll give Andy credit for in punting in that moment, you had a defensive lineman who was the best player on the field who couldn't be blocked, and you have an all-pro punter who pinned him in the 5-yard line twice.
Right. He did
both in the second half. So
you don't see the angle punt very often anymore. And Tommy executed two last night. Yeah, like so.
Okay. All pro for a reason. All pro Tommy showed up, and that's what we can get into the special teams as well. But obviously, the way that those guys played. But for Harry to be in that moment, and Tommy, and obviously Winchester, our snapper, for those guys to get a lot of criticism they took this year with Harrison's ankle, Tommy's holds, snaps at times for Winchester. For those guys to be in those moments, and for Tommy to pin that offense twice, and the crowd got into it and to force a couple false starts, and to get him to call some timeouts and miscommunication and those things. And Chris followed up with a sack. And obviously, Tommy had great holds. Harry was 100% on the day. For the special teams unit to live in, and Sky Moore is included in this as well. Those guys took a lot of heat this year. I just want to take a moment, Chris, to give them their flowers, because we all know that we've been on their heads this year for multiple mistakes. But to correct, especially Tobe, who you spoke on earlier, to be in those moments and to trust these guys and to trust the work that you put in this year, I can't say enough about them and how they executed in these moments.
Yeah, no, they were incredible. And maybe you were worried about – were you worried when that – other than like normal just like end of the game kicks, were you worried – did it even cross your mind that Harrison Butker had been struggling for the cup? Yeah, I was like, some people were worried that he was going to miss this. Like, it didn't even cross my mind.
I saw him in pregame. He was making everything.
Yeah. Everyone was confident. Well, he had a couple bad weeks and everyone was freaking out. And it was okay, he missed some extra points.
Not perfect.
He missed some 50 yarders. Like,
yeah, like.
I never got into the kicking drama with Harrison Butker. Like, it was just a quick little phase. He's been dynamite in the playoffs. He's got him to be dynamite in a dome in the Super Bowl. Although, it's a little scary. The mental game for Harrison Butker is going to be interesting, because the Chiefs started in Glendale, and he, on his first kick, injured himself in Arizona.
We've been checking things off the list, Chris. Why not? Why would we want it any other way?
Oh, go
to the same thing we started.
McDuffie injured himself in that game. Like, there's some mental hurdles on this turf this team's gonna have to get to. Well, they're also battling, you know, maybe the best roster in the NFL. It's gonna be a fun game.
Doing it all year, man. Everybody, we just been checking off. Your offense is not gonna be good without number 10. Check. Your QB is going to fall
biggest
off.
Biggest check. Keep checking that first one. Like, check, check, check. We'll throw Marcus Kipp out there, and it don't matter. Like, 15 going to find a way.
You're not going to have a 1,000-yard receiver, okay? Number one offense, check. Number one in points per game, check. Defense is top 2 in sacks, check. You're not going to beat the Bengals. They've beaten you 3 times in a row, check. I'm like, well, so why would we want it any other way? You can't win in Arizona. They got to. Another box we're going to check off, man. Job's not finished, Chris. Job's not finished.
And we will get a full breakdown on this Eagles game. Definitely a bunch of storylines highlighted by the Kelce game. And that's what I'm excited about.
Going to the ball, baby.
Along with Andy Reid game. You know, he started his career in Philly and had a very successful career there. So, like, there's going to be some fun storylines, and we'll get all into it next week. But any other thoughts real quick, CJ, before we get out of here?
Hey, man, Chiefs Kingdom, enjoy this moment. Live in this moment. And me and Chris said it on every episode. Be so thankful for the team that we have, the coaching staff. And I also want to give a shout-out to our training staff. I want to give a shout-out to Bobby Shrew, past personal trainer. Did a great job of getting him ready for the game this week, and other guys as well. There's nobody I trust more in the league than those guys to get this team ready and these guys ready to go physically and mentally for the Super Bowl. But appreciate these moments, Chris. I remember, and we always say this on every other episode, we go on our rants. When we were younger and kids, we never dreamed of competing for championships. And now we're going to our third Super Bowl in 4 years. I can't say enough about this team and these players and this fan base. I love Chiefs Kingdom. I love all the fans. You guys know it's such a family atmosphere. And I love talking to everyone and engaging with everyone. Chris is my guy since day one. And it seems like a couple of days ago we just met. Now we're about to go to our third Super Bowl in 4 years, bro. So I'm so thankful. I want to live in this moment. Just appreciate everything we've been through. Soak it in, enjoy it. And then we'll focus on Philly next week. But I'm going to enjoy it this week, Chris. This one felt good more than any other.
It felt good.
But I'm definitely appreciative of you, Arrowhead Live, and everybody else for these moments. And we got to go finish the job, man. We finished. Hey, Chris, we finished this. Hey, bro, we both going out of town. We all going to Cancun, bro.
We all going to Cancun.
We're all going.
You buying? No, I'm just playing.
I'm going to say, Mr. Hunt, hey, man, we've been talking a lot of
Maybe hit Eli Apple. Save us a room while he's out there.
He got one. Him and his mom. Yeah.
Oh man, buddy, I love doing these with you too. I can't wait. We got at least 2 more episodes before the offseason, the pregame for the Super Bowl and the post game, where it's gonna be tough, but we could start talking. I don't want to say it. I'm going to wait. I'm not going to start saying the D word yet. Yeah, there needs a little work to be done.
We got one
more.
We can
start throwing that out. But
one more game.
All right, CJ, hey, where can the good people find you?
People can definitely find me on Twitter at CGZ81, that's CJEEZY81. And please, please, please follow our page at The Aftermath KC. Me and Chris do a great job of trying to put out as much content as we can. I'll definitely post some clips of my favorite plays from the game this week and definitely some future breakdown for the Eagles game as well. And Chris, what can the people find you at on socials, my friend?
Hey, you can find me at TenPenny88, always on there, live tweeting the game most of the time. You know, sometimes I have hits, sometimes I have misses, but I will leave that – CJ, that BK commercial hits different when you go into the Super Bowl, man. Like, you got a few beers in you, did you go into the Super Bowl? That you just start jamming, whopper, whopper. No. Oh, goodness gracious! All right, hey, we're gonna get out of here. We appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Cheers.